We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius. And last night, the Lakers got an important win in an unserious basketball game to move to 5-1 on the road trip. They are now 11 games over 500, 44-33, just 5 games left in the regular season. Got a little bit of standings help last night from the Orlando Magic getting a road win in New Orleans. Today, we're going to talk a little bit about that road trip. D, we could start with this Washington game. Like I said, it was to me, they played the most unserious basketball in the league. They don't quite have the worst record, but between just kind of their style and their top players in terms of how they play, they can, I think, draw you into sort of an unserious game. Like I said, part of that is that I think the Lakers knew that whenever they needed to, they could turn the screws and push it back ahead. But man, Stu Lance was roasting them on the broadcast yesterday for not really giving a crap about the game. My favorite, the deep bench group, came in and just could not muster an ounce of competitiveness and had to put the starters back in to get a defensive stop. AD gets a block. Lakers win 125-120. Overall, a successful road trip, a frustrating but understandable game yesterday. But yeah, man, give me your thoughts about, let's start with last night.
The Wizards came out making every shot possible.
Yes.
It was sort of funny in the thread. I guess if the Wizards make 100% of their threes tonight, then they're going to win the basketball game, because they literally started 5-for-5. The Lakers did turn the screws then, and then they quickly got back into the game and took a lead, and then they controlled the rest of the game. The stretch where I was frustrated most was that first part of the fourth quarter, where the group that was in the game was clearly not into it from a physical standpoint, and the Wizards threw a zone at them, and the Lakers were sort of on autopilot there, and you get it. They're up big. It's the end of a long road trip. I thought they were mentally fatigued as much as they were physically fatigued. I got that Stu was frustrated with the team, because he's relating that portion of the game back to like all of this other stuff that's happened during the season, where the Lakers have let their foot off the gas and they haven't been in these exact circumstances. But I thought last night was like a different situation than some other random game that might have happened in December or January or something. The team was just tired. And I was hoping for Darvin to go back to the athletes.
Instead, the guys who like to run, yeah.
Yeah, or at least just like Rui was changing ends well all night. Jackson Hayes was changing ends well all night, right? And even if it would have been unorthodox lineups against the zone that they were running, I thought what the Lakers needed most was just guys with a pep in their step and guys who were willing to chase a loose ball or guys who were willing to get back in transition defense. And those weren't the guys that were in the game, LeBron included. And it's just like, it's the end of a 6-game road trip. The second 3-game and 4-night stretch on the second night of a back-to-back, I just thought the lineups needed more verve in terms of the guys in the game, and that expecting LeBron to be like, oh, foot on the ground, that wasn't it. But I was just like, okay, well, are they going to turn it around at all? And then they flipped that switch and suddenly the Wizards couldn't score at all. And then the Lakers started to score again. And then it's a 9-point lead and then it's a 12-point lead. And then it's a whatever. And then the deep bench came in and they were just like, how can we make this close?
Just again, like every time.
They're a frustrating group. So I don't want to get too far sidetracked on this specific topic, but I think it's worth mentioning that they just do not play a professional brand of basketball at all, at all. And they are consistently stat hunting and not reading the room. They are the raccoon at the open trash can. It's just like, oh, let me get in there. And like, I'm just going to get after it. It's just like, no, bro, there's 2 minutes left. Seriously, take 24 second violations for all I care. But don't act like this is the Rucker right now, because it's not. It's not.
Yeah, you got to play serious basketball. There's like just a lack of competitiveness in those minutes over and over again that I do not understand from guys that are barely in the league. But
no, so the road trip overall and then the Wizards game especially, like I was actually mostly happy.
Me too.
With the way that the team played. I understand all of these environmental circumstances that we were talking the entire game. They were almost turned down in a way that relaxed the team into that mindset, the same as like the Wizards style of play. So over and over again, Billy Mack and Stu were also talking about how it's quiet in here. There's like no juice in this room.
Yeah, Mike was commenting on that as well.
Further.
That's part of the unseriousness that I can that I was talking about, right? Is like they can turn it into sort of this open run, summer ball, scrimmage type of style of basketball that if you're on the third game in four nights, the last game of a six game road trip, and you know whenever you want to, you got, because that whole thing where you were like, all of a sudden the Lakers turned it up and it was a 12-point game in the blink of an eye. The players on the floor know that. And they know they can do that whenever they need to against that type of team. But it can lure teams. Milwaukee got by them and by Memphis last night as well, right? So you can lose games like that for sure.
Yeah, and so I was mostly happy then with what the starters did. Another excellent game from the starters, Pete. AD, 35 and 18. He just totally dominated them.
He got cracked in the eye, and it looked like in the orbital bone from an elbow, and then came out. He had like 19 and 6 in the first quarter, and after he got clocked, he was just like, okay, I'm just going to dominate this game. Lakers went from down 12 to up 10, you know, within just right away, just because he was just thrashing around the basket.
Yeah, Washington had nothing for him, so they had a European center.
Vucevic, yeah. He can shoot. He's got some game, but yeah.
Pardon me for not knowing that there was another Vucevic like
this
in
is
the
a
league,
Vucevic,
right?
Yes, and it's a slightly different. Yes.
And so, but a variation. Sure. So AD was probably just like, oh, all of these guys' names that have vowel
Listen,
consonant
if,
at
the guys
the end.
Whose last name, if their second to last letter is an I, AD has trouble with those guys. Nurkic, Sabonis, Jokic, you know, Embiid. I'm just saying.
So he saw this guy and he's just like, oh, I'm taking all my frustrations out on you. So AD was getting fouled all kinds. He took 11 first quarter free throws. Now, one of them was an illegal defense free throw, but he went 11 for 11 from the line in the first quarter alone, 15 for 15 from the line overall. And that's how you sort of know that his focus is there as well whenever he's making free throws at that level. And then just the rebounding and his physicality inside, I thought LeBron played a very controlled game. The guards were fine. I say LeBron played a pretty controlled game. Like his passing was still a little bit tricky, even though he still ends up with 8 or 9 assists or whatever he does. And I thought the guards were fine. And I thought Rui was great. Again, first game back in Washington, Pete, after being traded to the Lakers last season. And the crowd gave him a nice little welcome and they cheered for him a fair amount. So that was good to see. And Rui he paid it off for them. He had a really good game. Again, I put out a tweet yesterday after the game, just a great Rui road trip in terms of offensive production and offensive efficiency. I think he was 9 for 12 again last night. He had an 11 for 14 game against the Bucks. A 9 for 11 game or a 10 for 12 game. He's just been on fire and really in a great flow offensively. And again, I thought the guards were fine. And so overall, not the cleanest of wins per se, but a very professional within the context of everything win, even if at the end they sort of let go of the rope some. But that's, again, to be expected. So a 5-1 trip, Pete. And I just thought this is the way a team who needs to handle their business goes out and handles a road trip against teams that are not as good as them. And in that regard, the Lakers have turned the corner, I think. Like, there was a stretch earlier during the season where they would not take games like this seriously. And over the course of the road trip, I thought that was a key part of things.
I do, too. I also think that, like, there's a certain amount of managing the season to get through it where a lot of our losses were because we didn't have good enough players on the floor. Like, we weren't playing our best players. It's one of the strangest seasons I've ever seen from a lineup perspective where Cam and Prince got as much time as they did. Like, there's no other team in the NBA that plays their, like, ninth and 12th best players as much as we played those guys. And so, like, you say these were professional wins, and I agree. There were certainly elements of that game that were not as to be described as such.
But sure.
Yeah.
Well, they took some 30-minute, 15-minute breaks.
sure. But what I'm saying in the ultimate point of that is that if you have enough offensive talent in these type of games especially, that you can win that game by just hitting some of your threes and attacking the basket. It's not as difficult of a win. Whereas earlier in the year, we had legitimate, like, we have three smalls who don't rebound that much. And Austin and Prince especially have really upped their rebounding and effort and just kind of those aspects of the game. But earlier this season, like, we were losing those games. It wasn't just those can't be the, oh, LeBron's going to come save you because he was great tonight type of thing. And so being able to produce, let me read these kind of numbers. You were talking about the starters earlier, D. Anthony Davis, 28-16 on the road trip, shot 87% from the free throw line, 15-15 from the line last night. First guy since our guy Lou Williams, the professional scorer and foul hunter, first time a Laker has shot 15 free throws without missing one since him. LeBron went for 25 points, 9 assists, and 8 rebounds. On 63% from the field and 63% from 3-point range. D'Lo, 26 and 40% from 3, 89% from the line. Rui, 19-8. He averaged 7.5 rebounds a game over the course of this road trip, which I think is huge news and one of the most important developments for this team. On 65% from the field, 54% from 3. And then Austin, whose numbers I don't think are as reflective as how impactful he was 16-7-7. Another guy getting 7 rebounds a game. So let's take a break here. When we come back, we'll keep it going.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
So, Pete, talk to me about what do you think the road trip portends in terms of, like, the Lakers' mentality and sort of where they're at as a group and their comfort level on both sides of the ball. Mike sent us a text before the game, and he had cited going into the Wizards game over the last 10 games, the Lakers had stabilized in both offensive and defensive rating, that over the last 10 games, they were, I think, 10th in offense and 11th in defense, which is not what they had been in. But, like, you go back 15 games and it's just like, oh, they're 23rd in defense. And the level of competition certainly impacts those numbers, but the seriousness in which they've been approaching the games, particularly on defense, has stood out to me. And so what does a 5-1 trip portend to you in terms of where the Lakers are?
Those rebounding numbers from Austin and Rui are a good tangible place to, I think, lock in on something that's really important that's happened with this team, in that they are doing what they can on the boards. I've been just cracking up at loving watching Rui rebound, because he's like watching a coaching video with the grab the rebound and chin it, you know, which means you grab the rebound and you put the ball right under your chin. You got your elbows out. It's just very textbook, like 1960s coaching video type of, and it's still true today, right? It's still how you can secure a rebound. And so like watching him really put forth the, like, this is important, while not losing his offensive game, in fact, playing his best offensive basketball of the season. And so his ability to do that, and then Austin is tracking down a lot of the long rebounds that just killed, like, nothing gets my goat more than a long rebound that like bounces on the free throw line and your guys don't get it. Like, those to me are ones you have to win. And Austin's been getting a lot of those. We've talked a lot about the jumping and impacting on sandwich rebounds. AD at 17 rebounds a game, LeBron up there too at 8 or 9. Really, it's the rebounding aspect of the game that I've been super encouraged by. And Prince as well. I know this sounds, this is against what we've talked about a lot this season, but last night I was texting you guys like, look at Prince, man. He's just kicking ass, you know, boxing out, doing just, everybody's doing their job in a way that they weren't earlier in the year. And so to me, the defensive improvement is actually way more about just securing the ball on the final possession anyway. Cause like one of the putbacks are super high efficiency shots, and kick out threes are the easiest threes in the game. Defense is not in rotation. Oh, how often when we've shot around over the course of our life, the vast majority of the time, if you've got somebody with you to give you your change, if you make your shot, that person's under the basket. So you're receiving the basket. You're receiving the ball from under the basket. Your shoulders are already square to the rim. It's an easy shot. And so just securing the ball, D, that's really what I want to focus on.
A defensive possession doesn't end until you have the ball, right? And so that's why defensive rebounding is a part of defense. So for example, Sabonis leads the league in defensive rebounding, or is one of the best defensive rebounders in the league. I give him credit for that, as to helping close down defensive possessions, even if he's not a classic like rim protector from a big man position. And so does he have his defensive flaws? Sure. But he's helping the Kings defensively in this very specific way. And you can go around the league and find guys like Jokic is another perfect example of this. He was sort of railed on for his lack of defense, and he's gotten much better defensively over the last two or three years, not coincidentally in the time where the Nuggets have become contenders, right? But his ability to end defensive possessions with the basketball is super important. And so one of the reasons why we were so frustrated with the Lakers defense earlier during the season is because they were a top half of the league defense without actually being a very good rebounding team. And that's kind of hard. That's hard mm-hmm. to do, right? And so it shows that their defensive ceiling is pretty high once they start to clean up the little things more. And that's another frustration about the lineup stuff, is like the guys that the team went to in order to try to solve these specific problems actually weren't good on the glass. And so that first group that wasn't rebounding well, and they weren't rebounding well with Austin, Prince and D'Lo in the starting lineup, they replace Austin with Cam, but Cam's not a much better rebounder than Austin. Now he's better at the point of attack and all of this other stuff.
I don't know about all of this other stuff. That's about where the list ends in terms of what Cam Reddish might be better at in basketball than Austin. Again, look at the Christmas game. Sure. Our starting lineup, the Christmas game. I'm sorry. It's so hard to get over the spilled milk. And we're in it. We're right there. And just like every time we play well, I find myself being mad. Like, that sucks. And it's my fault, right? But every time I'm like, again, the reason I bring up the Christmas game, the starters that game were Torian Prince, Cam Reddish, Jared Vanderbilt, LeBron, and AD. So off the bench, you had D'Lo, Austin, and Rui. What were we doing? Sorry, I have to get over this. I have to stop complaining about this. I really hope we make the playoffs.
If they don't make the playoffs, we'll have plenty of time. There'll be plenty more segments just like this.
We're playing so well and I'm still mad. I need to stop.
I have pivoted away from a lot of that stuff just because this team has found its form.
Yes, they have.
And
believe me, man, I'm way more happy to have a team that finds its form and has the ability to do so because they've gotten enough guys healthy to do it. I think back to Frank's last season, and that team never found it.
I mean, they never had LeBron and AD more than three straight games.
Sure, but that's what I'm saying, though, too, is that there were factors that played into that that were injury-related, but I'm just saying it's just like, that was a season from hell.
Yeah, I had no idea what the starting lineup was by the end of the season.
This season, it looks like they understand what they can do. Also, before the last game, Jared Vanderbilt was doing more on-court work. Darvin got some questions about him before the game, and he said that he should be reevaluated early next week, which is good news. I'm not of the mind that it can be relied upon that he'll be back healthy by the time the regular season ends or would be ready for the postseason, but I am hopeful that that's the case, Pete, because if they could get Jared Vanderbilt back, there's a 10-player group within the Lakers where I'm just like, that is a formidable team right there that when deployed with the right amount of like flexibility within the groups, they can match up with pretty much any team in the league. And with LeBron and AD going at the level that they're going at now, the numbers that you just read off a couple of minutes ago, those are indicative of two stars that have found their way. Remember, it was just, 2.5 weeks ago, we were talking about LeBron and AD and their on-ball struggles, and there's still going to be some concern for some of that stuff against the highest level of competition for sure. But the general flow that they have as a team offensively, I think, is allowing LeBron and AD as well to still get numbers within the context of D'Lo shooting the ball well, Rui doing what he's doing, Austin being a second side attacker, and all of the shot creation that's coming from other parts of the team that aren't LeBron and AD. And I get that in a playoff series, some of that stuff will be dwindled down. But I'm super excited at the state of the team right now and what this group is showing that they can do. And they are playing their best basketball. So let's go to break here, Pete. And when we come back again, I'd love to sort of start to look forward a little bit, but also I've got a question for you about the middle part of the game again, in which the Lakers are sort of showing some seeds of what they were earlier in the season. And I'm kind of concerned about that part, at least. So after taking a game off, Pete, Gabe Vincent came back, right? And so he did some injury management stuff in the Lakers' last game against the Raptors and did not play, but he was back in the lineup. The Lakers have gone back to playing these three-guard groups and these smaller groups in the middle portion of the game. What have you thought about those specific groups? Because I'm concerned, to say the least.
I am concerned, but I am going to make the argument for them first. And so the game, what was the game they played? What was it? It was Brooklyn, right? Where Gabe returned.
Yes.
So in the game that they played against Brooklyn, there was a level of running around and sprinting. You know, now when we went to the Rui at the five, LeBron at the five type groups, this went away. But the problem that I've seen, especially in a game like Washington, where the whole team is kind of has a malaise where it's like, hey, we know we can beat these guys if we turn it up, is if you're small, you can't be slow. And so in that Brooklyn game, I thought they were running very well. And it was the first time I've seen one thing that Vincent does is he's one of our better switchers as a guard. And so there was just more switching and more just you get some more of the benefits of small ball. This is my big problem with it is it's like if you're going to go small, there are ways to do that to make it work, but you have to get the benefits of it. And it's a combination of like, well, you have to run, you have to beat guys to the spot because you're not going to win battles in the air as often because you're small. And so you have to beat guys to the spot, use what you do have, use your quickness, use all of that. And so if you are kind of jogging, that's not going to work. I have a concern about it being again in the last part of AD's shift, but last night he was incredible in the back half of the first quarter. And I thought he was very good in the back half of the third quarter as well. And so, but I'm concerned that that's going to be a big ask of him around a bunch of other smalls. And then on the offensive end, Gabe is a long way away from being the player that he's capable of being, and he might not have enough runway. You had pointed this out earlier. And then Dinwiddie, his offense can come and go. And so that's something that one of the reasons you go small is it's like, yeah, well, we're going to score a lot when we have this small group out there. So if you're not, you're not getting the benefits of small ball. And none of the perimeter players, as we have hit on several times before, are really good rebounders. Max is the only guy really in on the perimeter that does it well. And so that's something, again, Austin taking a leap in this respect is huge for this team. But that's sort of my overall view, D, is like, you got to run if you're going to be small. And you got to be able to score. And that actually is a lineup that often has two of our smaller guards that are getting 2 to 4 points a game on a lot of nights.
Yeah, I think my concern align with those, but go a step further in that if you're small, I'd love for you to be athletic as well. So I look at the Kings, right? The Kings play these three guard lineups, but their three guards are like De'Aaron Fox, Davion Mitchell, and Malik Monk. Or De'Aaron Fox, Keon Ellis, and Malik Monk. Malik Monk is one of the best athletes at guard you're going to find in the league.
Fox
is a bigger guard, but he's like lightning fast and brings so much to the table athletically. And Dinwiddie is the best athlete at guard the Lakers have. And Dinwiddie is a good athlete, but he's not a great athlete, right? And so if your guards are, the Lakers guards aren't small, but they're like not physical presences either. So Austin 6'5", D'Lo 6'5", Spencer 6'5", these are big enough guards to be like, oh, we can do some things, but they are not running jump players. They're not quick twitch athletes. They're not the sorts of guys that like get downhill in isolation by themselves. They need a screen to create their own shot a lot of times. And that to me is also an element of playing these smaller groups. Is this like, it's not just you got to sprint, you got to play hard, you can't be small and slow, but they're naturally not going to be fast all of the time. Like they have to be playing so hard to play at the level of quickness that the ask are. It's like not their natural state. In fact, the natural state of many of these players is to be deliberate and slower and calm.
It's a totally different style of basketball. How much would Vando's return resolve that?
Well, Vando's return makes it so that you're not playing these small lineups at all. This is my point about playing these groups in general. It's like, I honestly think Rui or Hayes should be on the floor instead of one of these smaller players. The other thing is too, is that some of these groups are with Prince at the four. And so it's a tricky equation. It's a rehashing of the issues that cropped up all during the season. You identify these players as, well, these are some of the best players on the team, and you're not wrong.
Every one of those guys on the floor deserves minutes.
Yeah, it was months and months and months ago that you said, write out the Lakers' top 11 players and tell me where the guards rank. And this was before Dinwiddie was on the team. And before you got too far, there was the Austin, D'Lo, Gabe trio. They were going to be in the top 7 or 8 of that. And so they all deserve to play. But those minutes are coming at the expense of potentially bigger groups. And I get why the coaches are giving these groups a chance. But as I watch them play, I'm like, oh man, you look deficient in this area. You look deficient in that area. And to your point earlier, they're not scoring well enough or looking fluid enough offensively to make up for the deficiencies that they might have defensively or in foot speed or on the defensive glass. And I get continuing trying to give these groups some time. It's not costing the Lakers games right now, but they're also playing a level of competition where these bench groups that they're up against aren't very good at all. So yeah, AD can thrash around and basically be like, oh yeah, well this second unit doesn't have anything for me. And we're playing three guards against a group of G League players, basically. Of course, we're even or minus two or minus four over the course of like two shifts. And so it's like, it was okay. But the eye test tells you more than the production test. It actually wasn't
okay. They weren't doing enough out there. And so that's where my concerns are. It's more like, is this a playoff lineup? And it doesn't look anything close to a playoff lineup to me. And if you're at this point of the season, I think you should be gearing more towards the groups that you that can potentially succeed in the playoffs and better align with the identity of the team. And that to me means playing Rui in those groups or doubling up with the bigs and playing Hayes with AD some. We've seen that those groups can be a little bit more successful over the course of the season. And I just want to start to get to that stuff a little bit more rather than giving these groups a chance.
I mean, we're in the last five games, my man. Like, if it was going to happen, it probably would have happened by now. And to me, Vando is the guy that he's got the credibility at that spot, and that lineup really cries out for a guy with his skill set. But he's also in a similar position to Gabe, where it's like, remember how long it took Vando to ramp up when he came back from his injury last time? He was not very good for like the first 10 games or so and didn't look like himself at all. And then all of a sudden it's like, okay, that's starting to look like him. And then by the time he got hurt, he was playing so well. And so if that happens again, we're out of time. And so, yeah, that to me is really the difference. If those groups are going to be playoff lineups or not, I think he's really the swing factor in that. Although I do agree with you that, you know, Rui and Hayes are the guys that it's. And again, it's not a matter of them individually. It's more a matter of like you have to take one of those four smaller players and replace them with a forward or a bigger type of player.
Have you been watching the Mind the Game?
Yes, it's podcast so good.
Listening to the Mind the Game podcast? Mm-hmm. For those listeners who aren't up on this, LeBron is on a podcast now with JJ Redick. They do a weekly pod, and they basically just talk basketball the entire time. They talk some schematic stuff, stuff around the league and in general. There was a segment that they had during the episode that dropped this week, and JJ Redick was talking some about team building. And they talked about the first Miami Heat team, the team that lost to Dallas, and then the subsequent Heat teams that got better players, basically, right? He's like, oh, we got Ray Allen, and then we got Shane Battier. And LeBron was just talking about how those players rounded out the team in a certain way. But JJ went on this bit of a rant, and he was talking about how JJ gets frustrated because fans sometimes will talk about like talent, 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 like get as many of these guys like as you can. And they're building fantasy teams when the skills don't necessarily connect and they don't complement each other in a way. And LeBron was just nodding his head away and like sort of chiming in too, just in full agreement with what JJ was saying. And this is where I'm at with this version of the Lakers right now is like, we talked about Hayes in yesterday's pod as being a really complimentary player. Like he compliments the guards. He compliments LeBron. He can even compliment AD in two big lineups that we see very sparingly, but we've seen it. And I think now is the time to lean more into those groups with the complementary players who actually work rather than trying to force the hand of being like, well, these are our better players. You might look at the competition between Hayes and Gabe or Hayes and Dinwiddie and be like, well, Dinwiddie's the more accomplished player and he's quote unquote better. But in some of these groups, it should be Hayes that's playing instead of that third guard because that completes the lineup a little bit more. And so I hate to like sidetrack it again, but it's sort of where I'm at now. Five games left. It's like it's go time. Get the groups together that we think can actually win.
And those groups are going to be put to the test this weekend. This is the biggest weekend of the season for the Lakers. This is a rough one, a 12:30 local game, first game back from a 6-game roadie versus Cleveland, who just got whooped by Phoenix last night. And then on Sunday, they play the Minnesota Timberwolves, who are the current one seed in the Western Conference and battling for position with OKC and Denver. So we will preview that weekend in full tomorrow. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game.
Rebound to Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. With his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed.
a Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Freddie pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell. There's the move. Two, one. Miss it. Bryant.
For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant.
Yeah.
And that was a little tough to Alvin Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.